Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
All right, 3, 2, 1. Hi, this is William Ramsey. Welcome to William Ramsey Investigates. On tonight's show, I have a very special guest. He is a prolific blogger and essay writer. He goes by Visup, V-I-S-U-P. His blog is V-I-S-U-P-V-I-E-W at blogspot.com, where he has a list of posts and writing that go back all the way back to 2010. So he's been publishing frequently on subjects which he refers to as 14 realms of mind control, deep politics, sacred geometry, onomatology, which I don't even know what that means, synchronicity, occult film and music. So this is definitely subject matter that I am interested in. We're going to talk about a group called Le Cirque. It's a European organization, and kind of just branch off from that central topic. But Visup, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. Well, thank you for agreeing to the interview. So maybe what we can start off at is talk a little bit about your background, yourself, how you became interested in these subjects, and why Le Cirque is an important topic for viewers to understand.
Well, like you said, I got into this at about 2010. It just sort of grew out of a lot of research I had been doing for a number of years, and after a while I thought that I had come up with a novel way to share information to this with the general public and what have you. I've kind of talked about this a little bit before, but I was sort of introduced to this whole conspiracy subculture from my father, who, I mean, I can kind of remember listening to William Cooper with him back in the early 90s. My dad had been in the army back in the late 50s. I actually originally had reported that he had been some branch of maybe the Green Berets or something like that, but based on the records I was able to get from him, it seems like he was some kind of army intelligence. He was stationed at Fort Meade for a while, which was the home of the NSA, of course, and then he was also in Greenland for a little bit at a listening post there. So I think he had some kind of background in SIGINT or something like that, signals intelligence, but I don't know if he ever really went by anything that he saw in the service, but I mean, he certainly had developed a very conspiratorial worldview that he generally passed on to me, I suppose, in a way. So that would really have been my inspiration for the blog and kind of the way that I got into this type of arcane research, if you will. And as for Le Cirque, it's really one of the major power centers among the elites, especially from the Cold War going forward. And it's obviously very little addressed in comparison to some of the other more well-known groups like the Bilderberg Group or the Council on Foreign Relations, even though Le Cirque had that kind of influence and that power for, I mean, really close to 60, 70 years now.
Gotcha. And how was Le Cirque, how was it founded? I mean, it's basically a elite Europe group, correct? Anti-communist?
Yes, yes, yes. Well, it actually began, ironically, as kind of a subgroup of the Bilderberg Group. Quite a few of the early members, there was some overlap with the Bilderbergers, but it was geared towards initially German and France rapprochement. Of course, this played into the whole project for what became the EU. Le Cirque was very much a major proponent of European integration going back to the 1950s, and they had been involved with a lot of the kind of proto groups in that, like the Pan-European Union and the one network that Otto von Habsburg set up. But anyway, the five founders of them were Franz Joseph Strauss, who was a very prominent politician in Germany for many years, Konrad Adenauer, who was a long-serving chancellor of Germany. He was the first post-war one. Then there was also Giulio Andrada, who was a prime minister of Italy. He also held a lot of other crucial positions there. And then finally, from France, there was Anton Panay, whose name, last name Panay, is sometimes used as a reference to Le Cercle. Sometimes it's called the Panay Circle. But anyway, gotcha. Panay was a very prominent French politician. And finally, there was the international man of mysteries, Jean Violet, who was really the big mover and shaker behind Le Cercle for a lot of years. And one thing that should probably point out about these five individuals that's really significant is that they were all affiliated with some type of very reactionary Catholic organization, generally one of two, those two being the Sovereign Military Order of Malta, more commonly referred to as the Knights of Malta, and Opus Dei. So Konrad Adenauer, I'm about 90% certain, was a Maltese knight. Andrada was definitely a Maltese knight, and Panay was definitely a Maltese knight. Franz Joseph Strauss was big with Opus Dei, as was Violet. And quite a few of the early members were usually tied into one of these two groups, most notably Otto von Habsburg and so forth. And that really was one of the distinguishing characteristics in the early years between Le Cercle and Bilderberg. Bilderberg was always much more centered around the Anglo-American establishment, maybe the Netherlands to some degree. But definitely it was kind of a bridge between this more Protestant, capitalistic-centric vision that kind of underlined Bilderberg versus this more reactionary Catholic ideology that was central to Le Cercle.
Right. I mean, and Opus Dei is a very intense organization. There, I think Robert Hansen was a member of Opus Dei, who was a spy for the Russians. I think he was an FBI agent or CIA agent here in the States. But they wear garters.
Yeah, he was FBI agents.
Yeah, he was FBI, right?
Yeah, he was FBI, yeah.
Right, so but they wear like garters, take vows. I think, I mean, if you look at some of the stuff Hansen was involved in, very, you know, intense kind of militaristic loyalty to the Catholic Church.
Absolutely. And on top of that, too, there's also been some compelling evidence has come out in recent years that Opus Dei was a key partner of the CIA in establishing a lot of the Gladio networks, quote unquote, across Western Europe. Of course, Gladio was actually only the name of the Italian component. They all had their individual names in each country, but for the sake of brevity, I'll just go with Gladio. Oh,
gotcha. Right, and Gladio was what? Doesn't Gladio mean like the sword or something like that?
Yes, Gladio. It was a Roman short sword that had two blades to it, but essentially Gladio was it was designed as a stay-behind network in most of Western Europe and some of the other nations there in the event that the Soviet Union invaded, and essentially the Gladio networks would be used to wage a guerrilla war in conjunction with U.S. Special Forces against the Soviets.
Right, so I mean these are they were very much afraid of communist infiltration, and at that time, I mean the communists, what, Eastern Germany, invasion of Hungary. So there definitely was, you know, a very looming authority, how intense the Soviet threat really was for some of these other states, you know, is open to question. But especially Italy had a very vibrant left-wing communist, you know, agitation within that country. So, you know, these Le Cercle and Gladio and all these things that grew up from very conservative right-wing members of those societies were there really out of a fear of the communist menace.
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, you know, these groups were generally selected by the CIA because they were, you know, perceived as being the only really truly anti-communist forces in Europe, essentially, along with the mafia and the Black International, the Fascist International, essentially the remnants of the Nazi Germany and Italian security services and what have you that were later employed by the CIA. So yeah, right. These were very reactionary circles we're talking about here.
Well, who was the CIA agent from who was in Italy, who became the head of the CIA and ended up drowned in a river. I forgot what his name was, but his primary role in Italy was
Colby,
right? Colby, who ties into the Franklin cover-up, right? He was his primary motives or aegis was anti-communism.
Well, absolutely. And Colby was also suspected of being a supernumerary with Opus Dei as well. And he might have been one of the principal figures who actually recruited Opus Dei to sort of help set up this network.
Interesting. So he plays into all that stuff, right? Yeah. So talk a little bit more about Le Cirque and its kind of influence through all these societies.
Well, it didn't really take off in the Anglosphere until the late 60s, the early 70s. I believe it was Carlos Pacentia, who was a prominent Italian industrialist who had reached out to the Rockefeller faction in the United States in the late 60s, around, I think, 67, 68. So David Rockefeller became involved with the Cercle around that point, along with several of his affiliates like Henry Kissinger, Zbigniew Brzezinski, apparently attended meetings at some point in the 70s. But later, a lot of these, or at least the Rockefeller faction, became rather disillusioned because of the extremely reactionary politics that they were engaged in. And at the time as well, détente was a big thing for the Rockefeller faction in the United States. This was a policy that Kissinger and Brzezinski had both pursued throughout the Nixon, Ford, and Carter administrations to kind of normalize relations with the Soviet Union. But in addition to that, they also brought in some crucial British partners in the early 70s. The link man for this was Brian Crozier. And Crozier is not a well-known figure in the States, but he was enormously well-connected. He had originally, I think, been recruited by French intelligence in the 1950s. He was later picked up by MI5, MI6, and he eventually was hired by the CIA's Cultural Freedom Foundation or something like that. In Europe, and he essentially ran a propaganda service for them during the mid-60s that was financed by Richard Mellon Scaife. And later he would found the Institute for the Study of Conflict in the UK in the early 70s that would become a crucial partner to the Cercle complex in the UK during that decade and beyond. But the thing Crozier really did is he brought in a lot of these veterans of the British Special Operations Executive into Le Cercle, and the SOE, the Special Operations Executive, was essentially Britain's covert operations wing during the Second World War II. It was the actual agency that the OSS was modeled upon, and not MI6, as is commonly claimed. But SOE was pretty much totally geared towards black ops, paramilitary operations, covert operations, this type of thing. And quite a few of these figures who eventually became involved with the Cercle complex, most notably Lord Julian Amery and a few of the other members, such as, what was his name? Colonel Henry Sporberg and Neil Billy McLean would go on to play a huge role in essentially creating what would now be considered the modern private military company industry. Gotcha. This went back to essentially the end of the British Empire. Well, not the end, but the official the end of the official British Empire as opposed to covert one in the early 60s. Right. A group of officers like Amery and what have you were opposed to this, and they essentially set up a situation in Yemen where they brought in David Sterling, one of the founders of the Special Air Service, to arrange for a group of mercenaries to go into this nation and effectively topple the communist forces that were in there to secure the natural resources there for the British government. And Sterling would go on to found WatchGuard International, which was essentially considered to be the first modern PMC, private military company, and that would spawn a whole garden industry in the UK in the 70s, and many of these groups were also linked to Le Cercle as well.
Interesting. And they were all involved in all kinds of subterfuge and political overthrows throughout really the Third World, Africa, some other states. Would that be correct?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, Amery, he was obsessed with trying to hold on to the natural resources in Africa and the Middle East. He saw this as absolutely integral to the preservation of British world power. And he was a big proponent of essentially creating this private network that, as you're saying, would operate throughout the developing world, but especially in Africa and the Middle East, to help preserve some of these resources.
Gotcha. I mean, one of my favorite movies is, have you ever seen Dogs of War with Christopher Walken?
Right. Yeah.
Great ending.
Yes, I don't want to ruin it,
but one of the best endings of all things. But basically a private military contractor out of the UK with, I think the guy he's talking to is somebody probably like Julian Amory. I can't remember the name of the writer. What was his name of Dogs of War? But it referenced...
It was Frederick Forster or something.
Forsyth, another Brit.
Yes.
But yeah, so, I mean, those things were definitely happening much more so. And to today, you have Blackwater Opera and American Burned by Prince, who actually popped up in the recent Mueller investigation because he traveled with some guy to the Seychelles. There was a Seychelles meeting. But Prince is definitely an operator operating in this kind of same PMC vein.
Well, yes, absolutely. And I mean, it's... I mean, one of the big PMCs currently active now in the UK is Aegis, Aegis Defense Services. And Aegis was actually the company that the U.S. Coalition Provisional Authority hired in Iraq, I believe in 2003, 2004, to oversee all of the private contractors that were in Iraq at the time. I mean, they ran an intelligence service and what have you. And the founder of Aegis, Tim Spicer, was awarded this contract for Aegis about a year after he had met with Le Cercle.
Wow. So Le Cercle is still potent and still operating in Europe. I wasn't aware of that.
Oh, yes. Now it doesn't really have the Catholic flavor that it used to have. It really was taken over by the British in the 1980s. Amory became the chairman in the 1980s. Another chairman was Crozier. And I believe every chairman since then has been British, if I'm not mistaken. But interestingly, despite the fact that Le Cercle was a very big proponent of European integration throughout the Cold War era, they've actually become one of the leading organizations of European skepticism in recent years.
Interesting. So they're not fully exiting, but they don't think the experiment is working out?
Yes, I would say that would be essentially correct. Another interesting thing, too, about the British members that you probably would be interested in knowing, Amory was actually the son of Leopold Amory, who was a major figure in Quigley's Round Table Group. In fact, he was apparently who took it over after Lord Milner died in the 1920s. And another prominent member of this Round Table Group was a guy named Lord Lothian, and eventually one of Lothian's descendants, I think it was maybe a nephew or something like that, became a chairman of Le Cercle during this past decade.
Fascinating. Yeah, so you see them just still, their talent pool is coming from the same well, so to speak, same familial wells, which actually...
Yes, absolutely.
So Le Cercle, you know, it's still operating as, I mean, how influential is it still, other than, you know, working through these private military MPCs, what other, are they involved in propaganda and subterfuge on kind of working against left-wing groups?
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Yes, I mean, I would imagine absolutely so. I mean, especially with the situation in Europe, of course, it's very hard to really determine the extent of what it's been up to in recent years because of the extreme secrecy, you know, surrounding the group. But it was definitely a major factor behind Brexit and what have you. Brexit, excuse me. Gotcha. And, you know, I imagine it would probably still be involved in a lot of these other, you know, I mean, anti-leftist agendas that have been played out in Europe in recent years. But again, there's unfortunately not a lot of information available on that for obvious reasons.
And you, in the title of your blog, You have them also as part of the pedocracy. Why do you have that statement that they're part of this kind of global pedophile movement or whatever?
Well, they actually seem to be at one of the forefront organizations probably in managing it. Quite a few of the members were linked to these kind of elite pedophile circles in the United States and the UK and in Belgium. It's a bit of a broad topic here, but I guess to go over a few of the highlights, one of the big American partners in Le Cercle by the 70s was William Casey, the famed CIA director during Reagan's administration. Casey was himself, of course, linked to the Franklin scandal. He was apparently on good terms with Craig Spence, who was also a close associate of Larry King. And curiously, all three of these men also appear to have been close to Roy Cohn, Donald Trump's infamous political mentor slash attorney.
Right.
So there's definitely a potential link via Casey to the Franklin scandal.
Well, he was giving advice to the writer of the Franklin conspiracy, right? Like, stay away from this. Didn't he tell the I can't remember the name of the author was John DeCamp. He was friends with DeCamp because they both worked in operation in Vietnam. It was
Phoenix program.
Yeah, thanks.
You know, you're thinking of Colby and not William Casey.
Okay, then I've got a mistake. I apologize.
It's okay. No problem. But Casey and Colby were both involved with the Cercle. So, okay. I mean, Colby would have definitely been in a position to know, that's for sure.
Okay, well, let's get back to Casey then. I made a mistake. I'm sorry.
It's okay. So, yeah, I mean, Casey, like I said, Casey was very close to Craig Spence, and there's been, you know, allegations that have come out in recent years that he was also involved in a D.C. Prostitution ring. I believe it was the one that Henry Vincent, I believe, had been the quote-unquote madam of. It was a homosexual ring, and Spence was tied into it. Casey was tied into it. Larry King had been tied into it, and Vincent had reported that they had repeatedly tried to get him to procure underage boys for them, and he had steadfastly refused, to his credit. But Casey definitely seems to have been a big player on the U.S. end in this kind of stuff, and his connection to Le Cercle is definitely very eye-opening in terms of some of the other members.
Remarkable.
So going into the British links, essentially, there have been at least three Cercle chairmen who have been accused of pedophilia. That would include Amory himself, Norman Lamont, and Julian Aitken, who were chairman during the 90s, respectively. Lamont was actually going into the early zeros as well. Amory was also apparently a good friend of Lord Mountbatten, I believe, who has also been extensively linked to pedophilia in the UK. Another person who was quite likely a Le Cercle member was Leon Britton. He had been the Home Secretary under Thatcher's regime. He was one of the individuals who had apparently worked to suppress the Westminster pedophile dossier, which had come out during the early 80s. Essentially, this was a list of names of suspected pedophiles in Thatcher's government. Britton was later revealed to also have been one of the individuals who was linked to this network. So he was the one basically tasked with investigating a network that he was quite likely involved with.
Wow, amazing, yeah.
Another one was Keith Joseph. This was Thatcher's Secretary of State for Education and Science, which obviously has some kind of disturbing connotations when you consider his involved in pedophilia.
But right.
He had worked with Crozier on psychological operations during the election years in 1987. Another one was Peter Morrison, who was Thatcher's some kind of parliamentary secretary, but he had been linked a lot to pedophilia during the Thatcher years, and he was close to Amory and Aikens. Another interesting figure was Julian Lewis. He had been involved with Crozier and his Six Eye network, which was essentially a private intelligence network that Crozier had set up. This featured some heavyweights from the U.S., including General Vernon Walters, who was a member of the Knights of Malta, and General Richard Stilwell. But anyway, Lewis was actually accused of essentially suppressing this investigation a magazine called Scallywag had done in the late 80s, early 90s into links that the British establishment had to pedophilia. They had compiled an extensive amount of documents on this. Lewis had essentially sued Scallywag for defamation. He was able to seize the files, and then he would essentially release the files that were related to the Labour Party, was suppressing those linked to the party. And then finally, there was the case of the Sue Ryder charity. Sue Ryder actually was, they had a hospice that catered essentially to dying children, and Jimmy Savile was accused of molesting several kids at this hospice in the 70s. And Sue Ryder's charities had also been linked to several other curious events, to say the least, but it had been founded, or at least partly sponsored by Henry Sporberg, who was a Circlet member. So, yeah, there was. It seems rather evident that the Circlet was very aware of these pedophile networks that were going on in the UK, and I suspect on some level they have been using this information to steer the direction essentially the British government was going in beginning in the 70s.
Gotcha. So it was used like a blackmail operation?
Yes, essentially. I mean, one of the first casualties actually was probably Edward Heath. He had been a conservative prime minister during the, I believe it was the early 70s, but he was essentially considered to be too soft on communism by the Circlet complex, and they had been circulating allegations that he was both a homosexual and a pedophile, and this had led to his government being brought down and replaced by the Labour government of Harold Wilson. Wilson had just inspired an all-out assault by a lot of these, you know, reactionary factions in the UK, and that eventually paved the way for the Iron Lady to assume the prime ministership.
Interesting. Wow. So they're just kind of like circling around and dictating policy. And you're saying Le Cirque was also involved in the Belgium pedophile scandal?
Yes. I was just getting to that. So, again, this is another interesting organization. It was called the Academia Européenne des Sciences Politiques. I believe that's how it's pronounced, but probably not. For the sake of not embarrassing myself with this pronunciation, I'm going to refer to it as the Academy. This was what a lot of people affiliated referred to it as. But it was founded in 1968 by a Belgian named Florimond Damon, and it was based in Brussels. Now, it would essentially become a major network for the Circlet complex. Essentially, it brought together members of the Circlet and the Bilderberg group with a lot of less reputable elements, shall we say. One of the first organizations in this regard that it came into contact with was the Ginter Press, which had been founded by a former OAS officer, Yves Guillon, more commonly known as Yves Gerenseric. Gerenseric had the dubious nickname of God's terrorist. He essentially has been linked to numerous acts of terrorism across the European continent throughout the 60s and the 70s. He was deeply involved in assisting a lot of the Italian neo-fascist groups wage the strategy of tension in Italy during the 1970s. The Agenda Press was officially sponsored by the Portuguese government under Salazar. It had an office in Lisbon. It was used to conduct assassinations and other acts of terrorism in the colonies that Portugal still had in Africa. It was later hired by the United States, ironically, to help assist in the suppression of Guatemala in the late 60s, early 70s, where reportedly 50,000 people were killed. And later, Jenner operatives ended up in Chile, where they also assisted Pinochet and his regime there. So, mm-hmm. They were very much at the forefront of right-wing terrorism throughout the Cold War era. Also, there were members of the P2 that were directly involved in the Academy, and several members of the Academy were involved with a group known as the P7, which allegedly was one of the major sources of funding for the P2. Brian Crozier himself. Right.
For people who don't know, P2 stands for Propaganda Due, a high Masonic organization in Italy, which produced, what was the guy, what was the most recent prime minister who's under,
it starts with a B.
Berlusconi, right. So
can picture it in my head.
Well, the Berlusconi story is actually a fascinating aspect of P2 and its power, because one of the the reasons why Berlusconi was able to become such a titan within the Italian country is because he received loans through the head of the P2 at a interest rate that was much lower than the standard public rate. So he was able to leverage this cheap money to really outmaneuver any other business person in Italy and purchase things at a much easier rates that were easier to pay back. And that's how Berlusconi took over. And those issues are still going. I mean, P2's power is still being felt in Italy today. There was recently a poisoning of a witness against Berlusconi. Her name was Imane Fadil. Have you heard of her?
No.
Yeah, so Berlusconi is involved in these bunga bunga parties, which were like basically eyes wide shut parties. And
really?
It's still going. Yeah, still ongoing. But she was poisoned by heavy metal. She had some very strange poisoning and died. So really pretty suspicious death associated with Berlusconi, P2, very hard right Italian politicians.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
And an interesting thing is, based on my research, it actually seems like that P2 was not the only one of these lodges. There was also reportedly P1 in France, and P3 in Spain. P3 also would sort of tie into the saga of La Socola. I can get to that in a minute here, because that kind of ties into what you're talking about with the stealth banking practices that were essentially practiced in Italy at the time. But anyway, and then there was P7, the institute I just mentioned here that was linked to the academy. P7 was essentially Belgium's propaganda lodge, essentially.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, he had very, very, heavy hitters here, people that were deeply involved in terrorism throughout the European continent and beyond during this era. Now, as for the charges of pedophilia, there were two very noteworthy members of the Academy in this regard. One was Paul Vedenant, I believe is how it's pronounced. For the sake of brevity, I'm just going to refer to him as a BDB. That was his nickname in the Belgian press, BDB. He was the defense minister through much of the 70s, and then he eventually became Belgium's prime minister from 1978 to 1979. And another one of his close affiliates in the academy was the Black Baron, Benoît de Bonnevoisin. De Bonnevoisin was the son of a founder of the Bilderberg Group. Now, both of these men were eventually linked to the pedophile networks in Belgium during the 90s when the Dutroux affair was exposed. Those of you unaware, Marc Dutroux was he's usually described as a serial killer. Essentially, he had abducted young women, many of them who were minors, across the nation, and had kept them in these rather elaborate, almost dungeon-like areas that he had in his house, and he tortured and raped them in these areas. And of course, in the 90s, there were allegations that he had been procuring women for a prominent Belgian gangster who had links to these kind of clandestine fascist networks in Belgium at the time. And this had encouraged a lot of victims of these networks to come forward, and they had started to name names, and two of the most prominent ones were VDP and Bonnevoisin. And VDP had actually been linked to these pedophile networks as far back as the early 80s. One of the major neo-fascist groups in Belgium at the time was an organization known as the Westland New Post. And it was founded and overseen by a man named Paul Latinius. Paul Latinius had been involved with the Belgian security services, but curiously, at the age of 17, he had been recruited by the American Defense Intelligence Agency. This is the military's principal intelligence service. And he was also trained at Fort Bragg, which is where most of the United States' elite special operations forces are trained. So he was essentially also an agent of American intelligence, as well as an agent of Belgian intelligence. He had eventually gone on to found the Westland New Post, which was linked to a series of supermarket shootings in Belgium in the 1980s. Essentially, gunmen walked into supermarkets and some other crowded areas and just started randomly opening firing at people. Quite a few women and children were fortunately wounded or killed in these instances. But anyway, Latinius had compiled a insurance policy that's become that's been dubbed the Pinot File. Essentially, this was a collection of prominent Belgians that he was aware of and had compiled evidence that were engaged in these pedophile networks. But it did not do Latinius a lot of good. He committed suicide under rather dubious circumstances in the early 80s, but this was essentially the first time that the references to these elite pedophile networks in Belgium had come out, and they would later be expanded upon greatly in the 90s.
Gotcha. So they've had their own suspicious pedophile networks, Belgium, UK. Yeah, so we're going all the, with connections going all the way to the top. And the whole Dutroux affair really did go to the top. There were prosecutors who were let go. The investigation was undermined. There was actually a huge protest that was like 300,000 or 400,000 people walked out in the street. They were outraged by
The nation's capital.
Yeah, I mean, just a really an amazing story that unfortunately doesn't get enough coverage. But I mean, at least in parapolitical circles, people are looking at. But it is an incredible story, and Dutroux looked like he was connected, like he was networked. He was traveling outside of I think they had records of him traveling outside of Belgium, you know, frequently. So,
yeah, absolutely. But I mean, it really seems like when you sort of, step back a little bit and look at the broader connections, Le Cercle was really at the forefront of these, you know, elite pedophile networks. I don't know if they were actively, you know, creating them or if they were simply aware of them, but it seems like they had accumulated a rather extensive amount of knowledge of these networks by the 1970s, certainly by the 1980s, and I suspect that played a major role in the rise to prominence during this time frame.
Yeah, it's remarkable. So, what else about Le Cercle should we cover that we haven't really looked into?
Well, I'll get into the Sniffer plane scandal, actually. That's okay. Kind of an interesting little anecdote that kind of plays into something you're talking about, the shady financial dealings in Italy. Okay. So this had its origins going back to a company that was founded in 1965 in Geneva by, I believe, an individual named Odio Benossoli or something like that. He was a Italian TV repairman who proclaimed himself to be a nuclear physicist. And a Belgian count named Elaine de Villegas, I believe. But anyway, Elaine was the son-in-law of the brother-in-law of the founder of the Academy, Florimond Desmahn. So he was very tied into the Cercle complex, and he had eventually caught the eye of Jean Violet. He was the Frenchman who was a longtime chairman of Cercle, and he was generally considered to be big mover and shaker in it throughout the 50s, 60s, and the 70s. But anyway, Elaine believed that he and his Italian compatriot had developed a way to detect fresh water underneath the earth, essentially. They had pitched this idea to the Spanish government, and they had received some backing from the government, from individuals that were linked to Opus Dei. But the technology was bogus and nothing came of it. So they went back to the drawing board, refined it, and then claimed that they had developed a way to sense oil that was underground. Essentially, this device could be mounted to an airplane, hence the name Cipher Airplanes. It could fly around the countryside and it could undercover pockets of oil that were hidden in the earth. And remarkably, they were able to convince the government of South Africa initially to sponsor this, which, you know, I mean, it produced nothing. And then later, through the assistance of Violet, they were able to get ELF, which was France's state-owned oil company, to sponsor the research. And ELF put a considerable amount of money up for this. It would have been the equivalent, I believe, of about $70 million in U.S. currency in the 1970s, wow, which was a pretty generous chunk of change, to put it mildly, at this time. And much of the money for this project was routed to a Swiss bank that was owned by Banco Ambrosiano, which was the bank that Roberto Calvia controlled. He was, of course, the famous banker for the Vatican. He was named God, nicknamed God's banker. He was also a member of the P2. And essentially most of the money for this that had come from the French taxpayers was siphoned off into this accounts, and it was basically lost. And it also appears to have contributed to the collapse of the Banco Occidental in Spain, which was another Opus Dei-linked bank that was actually featured the grandmaster of the P3 as the board of directors. But there's a lot of speculation that the sniffer plane subterfuge had been carried out essentially to extort this money from the French government and from these other sources that was then being used by the Vatican to finance the Polish solidarity movement that was then beginning to take off, which became a major headache for the Soviet Union in this time frame.
Right, so the money really is never lost. But it's lost in quotes, right? Like, we lost it, but yeah.
Exactly.
Calvi ended up under like a bridge in London, and he was...
Blackfriars
Bridge, upside down in the tarot symbol of the hanged man, correct?
Yes, he had his pockets stuffed with stones and what have you. And the selection of the Blackfriars Bridge was quite interesting as well, because I don't know if you've ever seen any images of the P2 members when they were in their Masonic regalia, but it's a bit different than what you would normally see in a Masonic lodge. Essentially, it looks like a black Klansman's outfit. In the sense that instead of being a white sheet, it's a black sheet. It's essentially like a black Klansman's hood, essentially. And because of this, they reportedly refer to themselves as Black Friars in their meetings. So it's rather interesting in that sense that Calvia was hanged underneath Black Friars Bridge in the UK.
Right, so it's some kind of inside job. Isn't P2 in Italy located in Genoa, too? It's not in Rome, right?
No. You're correct. It wasn't in Rome. I feel like maybe it was Tuscany where the first lodge was or something.
But yeah, I think it was Andriotti was the big head of P2, who was like almost a Luciferian figure when they interviewed him. Like, I remember seeing an interview with that guy, the head of the P2, and it was like the guy had incredible power, man. It's really an amazing story, that whole P2 lodge.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Well, the official head was Gelli, Lucio Gelli, but yes, Andradia was reputed to be but Andradia was reputed to be the actual head of the P2. At least this was what Calvi alleged. And as I said earlier, Andradia was also a founding member of the Socla.
Right, so he's like one of those kind of global players. I mean, and so they're involved in banking. I mean, that's a whole other aspect of it, is that they are involved in financing. You know, you just see some pieces of it, but it's clear that they're financing interested parties who are similar to them, right? Financing their ascent or whatever.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Well, absolutely. I mean, it seems like, I mean, going into the 80s, a lot of the money that was being siphoned off by the affiliates of the P2 was probably also being used to fund essentially what became the death squads in Central America, and possibly also the Mujahideen in Afghanistan as well. And this is essentially part of the reason for this, you know, kind of creative financial practices, which left a lot of these banks destitute, the Vatican and La Cercle and a lot of these other organizations could not, you know, directly fund a death squad, for instance, in El Salvador or something like that. So they needed another way to go about doing this. And it seems effectively that they came into arrangement with the mafia where a certain amount of money would be laundered through the Vatican Bank and it would be skimmed off by this, you know, kind of the Cercle / P2 complex, and it would be put towards their own political ends, essentially. And this way, the respectable players in these endeavors would essentially, you know, keep their hands clean, effectively.
Right. I mean, and they really were kind of like, I mean, people bandy about the term fascists and, you know, scream the word fascist, but I think it'd be accurately applied to, you know, the Cercle complex. Would you agree with that?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I think specifically clerical fascism would probably be the best way to describe it because of the typically close relationship they've had to the reactionary Catholic right, okay. Which seems to have continued somewhat. I mean, in the UK, I mean, there were other fascist networks, of course, involved. And I mean, you can even see that to some extent in Italy with the Gladio networks. Of course, there were a lot of the followers of Julius Evola, the prominent philosopher. Right. For an occultist who were also tied up in the P2 network. And Evola, of course, was fanatically anti-Christian. He was a pagan, obviously. But there was still, you know, I mean, a certain degree of overlap between these groups, despite the fact that they had some very divergent views on certain topics.
Well, for people who haven't heard his name of Julius Evola, E-V-O-L-A, do you know anything about him in detail or what his writings were like?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. No, I've actually read quite a few of Evola's books. I became really interested in him several years before he was, I guess, name-dropped by Steve Bannon, and then which was later reported by the New York Times a few years ago. But Evola was really one of the cornerstone philosophical thinkers in reinventing fascism in the post-war years. During the Second World War, it appears that Evola had been recruited into the SD, which was the Foreign Intelligence Service. There were two SDs. There was the domestic one for Nazi Germany, and then there was the foreign one, which essentially became Nazi Germany's equivalent of the CIA. Evola worked potentially with the foreign one. But towards the end of the war, he was involved in a bizarre project where he was essentially studying Freemasonry and other subversive occultic secret societies on behalf of the SS. And there's some speculation, most notably by the great Kevin Coogan, that he was developing a kind of pan-European ideology that could be used by the Black International in the aftermath of the Second World War to reinvigorate the fascist cause, if you will. And it seems like this was very much the case as to what he was doing in the post-war years. Of course, he became just an enormous influence in a lot of these very extremist right-wing groups. And it seems like he had even established ties with the CIA to some capacity as well to continue promoting this ideology. And the thing about Evola, pretty much every major Italian neo-fascist terrorist at some time or other had fallen under the spell of Evola. Probably the most notable one was, I believe it was Pino Ritano or something like that. He was the founder of the New Order, and the New Order was essentially the principal organization that was used for the Gladio-linked terrorism in Italy throughout the 1970s. The founder of this group was a huge, huge fan of Evola. So, I mean, it was a credible amount of influence that he had on a lot of these networks. Of course, you know, we're not really privy to a lot of it in America and the UK because Evola's writings were not translated into English, I believe, widely until the 90s, if I remember correctly. But in a lot of the European countries, especially the Catholic ones like France, Italy, I mean, he had a huge, huge influence. And it seems like in this day and age, he may well be even more influential now than he was during his own lifetime.
Yeah, it's amazing. I actually there's a lot of parallels between Evola and Crowley, both like aristocratic, highborn, into magic, all kinds of esotericism, anti-Christian, into drugs, mountaineers, you know, world religion, meeting of East and West. Ebola really is something else. I mean, kind of very similar, but and you could. Well, You can make questions about how
well there was some
influence Crowley is politically instead of merely as an occultist, but how his political influence is. It's a good, very good question, but Ebola, very fascinating character.
Well, definitely, in the comparisons between Crowley and Ebola were very interesting too, because I mean, they obviously were inspired by a lot of the same sources, but I mean, it seems like they came to some pretty. Different interpretations. Of course, my understanding with Crowley, and I'll preface by saying Crowley's not really my area of expertise. I mean, I know something about Crowley. You pretty much have to go into this kind of research, right. but I'm much more familiar with Boli. But my understanding essentially of Crowley, he saw himself as a prophet who was restoring the stellium, if you will.
You have to repeat that. That kind of came in out.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Oh, I think that's... You done? Let's see. Oh, we made it 45 minutes. Let's try again.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby. Mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa. Take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Ch-ch-chumba. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.